Mike, what are we talking about in today's episode of Moving the Goalposts?
Today, we discuss the Red Sox taking a 2-1 lead in the ALDS over the Rays and accept apologies for the hatred of Chaim Bloom on this show.
Yeah. Maybe not apologies, but definitely, we'll get into it. We also talk about the Patriots. They finally won a game again on the road, 2-0 on the road. The Patriots are.
Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast, rate, review, and tell a friend. Moving the goalposts wherever you listen.
You ready?
Everybody, welcome to Moving the Goalposts. I am your host, Nick Mara, joined by my co-host, Mike Masala. Mike, how are you now?
Doing well, brother. How are you?
Not so bad. Producer extraordinaire Andrew Meehan over there. We're working through.
Yeah,
technical difficulties.
Technical difficulties, but it's all about the. It's not the worst stuff I've ever been through, so I can say that.
Considering it took me like 10 minutes to figure out that the audio wasn't connecting because the computer was like slanted by about 45 degrees or something. I don't know.
I told you.
Yeah, no, you were right.
I didn't want to tell you, but I told you.
You're right. You can check us out on social media. On Twitter, I'm available at NickMara94. Masala is available at Mike_Masala. Meehan can be reached at Meehan_A_83.
A lot of Twitter activity this weekend.
Yeah, well, it was a busy weekend for sports.
Oh, but I was getting blown up a little bit.
Why? What'd you do?
Because, like, I was just, you know, people are picking
a fight.
People are, you know, stroking themselves to Brady's five, you know, touchdown game this weekend. And which, I'm sorry, I'm just not surprised by it anymore. I'm not.
Neither am I.
You know, it's like, I'm not saying it's a bad thing. But, you know, I don't know. People are just like, oh, he threw to Brown. And I was like, oh, well, I'm going to assume Brown was wide ass open. So.
I am not surprised. I did see that when I was thinking about letting you know that he didn't throw the ball in that direction, but you are absolutely right. I mean, the coverage was absolutely terrible.
No, and, but then some person was like, oh, in that giant pile of people, I'm like, what, four defenders spread across each other for like more than like 10 or 15 yards?
Well, we got an expert now who can tell us everything about that Buccaneers-Dolphins game. Masala now is the interim editor for the Miami Dolphins. Of course, that was news that we probably could have broke on the podcast, but we didn't find out until the very end. So congratulations, Mike.
Thank you, sir.
Round of applause, indeed. Is Tom Brady still good, or is Miami just awful?
A little bit of both. Okay. I would probably say a little bit of both. Just watching that game, the Dolphins defense, which was expected to be one of their strong points, is not good. If you get burnt for two touchdowns by Antonio Brown, two touchdowns by Mike Evans, you can't cover Leonard Fournette out the backfield. Like, it's just everything all around. Didn't look great. But Tom Brady is still good, for those wondering.
And you would think, oh, no, it's not very quiet. You would think, like, B-Flow, looking at the film from New England, would have been able to pick up on something. Apparently not. Either that or maybe as bad as our own defense has been, maybe that's just a personnel thing.
It's possible.
I don't know. Because I would have to say that we probably have a little bit more talent than Miami's defense does. I don't know. Mike is the expert, but I don't know. Like, I'm not surprised by it anymore. And people got to get over that he's not doing that with this offense. Sorry, it just, he's not.
Tampa's a good team.
Tampa's a good team.
And
I guess we'll get into that later.
And they'll have success. They'll continue to have success. Another team in Tampa, though, is also a pretty good team. That's the Tampa Bay Rays. How about we start talking baseball on today's episode?
I think I owe the Red Sox an apology.
I think I might as well, but I'm still here. All right. Here's what I'm going to say. I'm going to unzip my pants and put it all out on the table. I was not exactly right in saying that if they don't win the wild card game, heads have to roll, because now I think we are where this team should have been 3 months ago, right? Which is competing for a spot in the championship series. Like, you should have been one of the final four teams around. And we're obviously recording this on Monday, the day of game four. Boston just took a 2-1 series lead over the Rays in the division series. And it's been fun baseball to watch. Is that even something that you can say nowadays?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy, yeah. Especially considering the game was only available on MLB Network. What are we doing here?
What a freaking joke that is, huh? But at least the NLDS is on at 8 o'clock. At least, you know, that's going to be on TV. Not the ALDS, though. Why would we do that?
It's extremely stupid. A sport that is struggling to get young fans. Let's make it on this package that you now have to pay. I don't even know how much MLB Network is, but a premium to watch playoff baseball, where every other sport makes it easy and accessible. You have to strive to find it here.
I was actually listening. So I started off by watching the game, got about an inning and a half into it, and was tired. It was a long day. You had
13 innings, right? 13?
Well, I'm talking like the second inning. I fell asleep. But it was a long day for sports. You had the Jets and the Falcons in the morning, and then the Patriots and the Texans, and then you had baseball literally right after that. So I had to rest, we'll say.
Yeah.
So I took a nap, and I woke up in the eighth inning, and Boston had crawled their way back into the game, not only to make it a game, but also grab the lead. And then Tampa found a way to tie it in the eighth inning. So I was listening to the final five innings of that game on the radio. That might be where baseball is at its best, is on the radio.
I mean, it is always a classic. I just remember, like, always growing up, like, listening to it in the car with, like, my dad or, like, my grandparent, my grandfather. Like, that was just a core memory for me as a child. And so I'm always going to be partial to the radio broadcast.
Because, like, yesterday is a perfect example where you can kind of, like, you don't have to pay attention to every pitch in baseball. I don't think anybody expects you to pay attention to every single pitch. You can kind of go in and out of the game throughout the day. And because it lasted over 5 hours, I was able to watch all of the meaningful parts of it. I think there was a game that Boston played against the Yankees a couple of years ago that went like 15 innings or 16 innings or something. And it was the same type of thing where I watched the first three innings and then I went and did something for like 3 or 4 hours. And then I came back and I watched 9 innings of baseball anyway. I was going to send out a tweet, by the way, that Major League Baseball needs to fix the regular season. I don't know how or why, but something like that yesterday, awesome. Why can't we get more of it in the regular season? And I don't mean more games or more extra inning games, but more high leverage, intense moments in baseball.
Well, you need to cut down the number of games. That's the only way you can do that. And they're not willing to give up that money.
Well, because you're not paying attention. I don't know if this is really going to make sense, but I guess this is the way I look at it. You know, how many teams are really fighting for a spot towards the last few weeks of the season? I mean, the last month of Red Sox baseball has, up until last night and really up until the wild card game, was really kind of hard to sit there and watch.
Yeah,
because it was just god awful baseball. And I'm not just talking about the pitching or stuff, but you guys have making, you know, base running mistakes and just stupid crap like that, that just made it unbearable to watch at times, especially for 9 innings. The game's hard enough to watch nowadays as it is. That's the way I look at it. You don't see a whole, it's the Red Sox and the Yankees in the last week, you know, fighting for that wild card spot. That's what really all was. That's the only intense thing. Tampa's got their, you know, spot solidified. That's the way I look at it, at least.
And I agree with you, Mike. There's too many games. There's too many games where you could say everything means something, but in reality, most of it means nothing.
Right.
Because Tampa finished with 100 wins. Tampa finished with 100 wins, and I think Boston finished with 92.
Yes.
So they're like 8 games behind them. Tied with the Yankees, you have to go into that wild card game to ensure a spot in the division series, and they take care of business. And that, to me, is the switch that baseball flips for the postseason, is the energy in Fenway Park. It started in that wild card game.
Oh, man.
And then it continued over into yesterday's game back in Boston.
Did you guys see there was a video of, I mean, I feel bad. I feel bad for Gerrit Cole. Oh, man.
Oh, yeah.
Fenway ate him alive.
Warming up.
Even in the bullpen, they were just like, that's a ball all day. You're screwed. Oh, man. he looked shook on the mound the entire night for the what, three innings that he was out there.
Yeah.
Two plus maybe.
Oh, he didn't last very long. Oof. And that actually, if we can kind of switch gears and talk quickly about the baseball, that seems to be the trend nowadays in the postseason is you don't have starting pitchers anymore. You have openers and you have a long arm in the bullpen. And then you've got guys at the end that are going to kind of like shut things down. And to be honest with you, I don't mind it for the postseason because every single pitch is high intensity and high energy. But if we're grinding this out over 162, yeah, I don't want to see five different guys come in to get 27 outs.
I mean, our starters were awful to start the series against the Rays as well. Like what, Sale, one inning, half an inning?
I don't even know, actually. I think he got
up. I think he made it through one.
I know he let up two in the first inning and then got pulled. Which, and I don't know if that, I mean, that's the Tommy John, and you know, it's maybe the comeback wasn't really there, but even Erod, holy crap, our starters are just.
So, Mike, I will give you 5 minutes to dance on the graves of me and Andrew, if you so choose.
I'm a gracious winner. I like to say that.
You like to have your cake and eat it too.
Yeah, I'm not gonna sit around and say I told you so's or laugh at the heads are gonna roll comments. Just like I'm just gonna sit here and enjoy baseball. Like we just talked about, like the season being too long. Like I feel like I'm an above average baseball fan. Like I watch more than most people. I probably watch like 85 games this year.
That's a lot.
Like that's a lot of games.
That's a lot.
And you're not like you're halfway through the season. So like I don't know. There's a lot of people were saying a lot of things. Some of them may be in this room about
that's how you know they're definitely in this room.
About the team not necessarily being a contender or how Chaim Bloom made some moves that maybe weren't the best moves or didn't make any moves that would have helped the team. I don't know. I think they have been really playing complete baseball over the last, especially like the last week and a half. Like they have looked like one of the best teams in baseball. It seems like, and I don't like to be one of those guys who's all team of destiny type things, but they're giving off some of those vibes a little bit.
I mean, I don't know if I don't want to get too far, but like, Mike, I had 2004 vibes last night.
Oh, God.
No, I just.
That's too far. I'll give you 2013.
I'm not saying we're going to a friggin' World Series. I'm not saying that. But like just the walk off. And I was like, man, you know, it's about a comeback. You're climbing out of a hole that you dug yourself in.
It was a funky game. It was definitely a funky game to take a lead in the series that. Renfro, I don't think I've ever seen anything like that Renfro play where it bounced off the wall, then off him, then into the bullpen, and they ruled it a ground rule double. So a Rosarena or whoever it was that was rounding third wasn't allowed to score.
Like, I mean, that's going to be the Tuck rule. That is what we're going to hear about. If the Red Sox do end up making it and winning something here, that we're going to hear about that for the rest of our lives.
I thought it was a good call.
I mean, it's the right call.
What did it come down to? Not that there was no intent to put the ball over the wall. Or I think the fence.
Is that there was no intent and that the runner hadn't already rounded third base by the time the ball was out of play.
They I think made an effort on the broadcast to say he was definitely going to be safe. It would have been a real close play, I think. So because when he actually got the ball, he was like maybe a step from third base, a step or two from third base.
Yeah, by the time the ball landed on the grass in the bullpen, his foot was on the third base back.
Right. Like, so, and you think about Hunter Renfro, who led the league this year in outfield assists. Like, the guy has a crazy arm. I mean, we just saw in the Yankees game a couple crazy relays in and throw a guy out at home. I wouldn't put that past that play. But yeah, it was definitely one of the crazier plays. I said, I think in the 10th or 11th when Vasquez got up, the time before he hit the home run, I was like, this has Christian Vasquez first row home run game all over it. Like one that barely squeaks it out. And this is how the game ends. Like that's just the way it felt that whole night. The guy who you least expected to be a hero is the guy who comes through.
See, I had that feeling about Dahlbeck when he came up, and I think there was a man on first.
You've really changed. You've really turned over.
I didn't think it was going to happen, but I was just like, could you imagine like Bobby Dahlbeck walk off homer? And he strikes out. Homers and strikeouts. That's all that man hits.
Like even last night, I was messaging with a buddy of mine who was like, oh, the Red Sox won. Congratulations. And I was like, they haven't won a damn thing yet. They still got a long way to go. You still have one more game to win to even make it to the next series.
So if they make it, if they at least make it to the ALCS, what would you say about the season?
Success.
Okay. All
right. I think right now it's a success. I think if you win two games against the Rays, who were the best team in the AL all year, yeah. I think that's pretty much a guarantee there for
you. But I think right now you have reached the bare minimum expectation that you set forth throughout the season. If you make it to the championship series and you're one of the final four, then I would say, okay, everything else is gravy.
You certainly proved a lot of people wrong.
Yeah.
Right.
Especially in the middle of the season. Because after the All-Star break is when it all turned, if you really think about it.
Trade deadline.
All-Star break is when the hitting started to go way downhill and it just wasn't what it was before the break.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, trade deadline did not help it at all. The Kyle Schwarber, I give this to Heim. The Schwarber trade was certainly that is the move that he has made that certainly is working out of everything else that probably happened, out of the no-name pitchers that we probably got. I don't know, the guy can hit. He's hitting quite frankly better than some that have been on that have gone downhill in that amount of time.
Thank you, Heim. We can say it. It's fine.
Thank you, Heim.
All right.
Wasn't a bad pickup. I mean, I'm glad JD, you know, wrapped up his ankle the other night and actually got out in the field.
There are a lot of, yes, you're right, other circumstances that happen to be falling into place surrounding the addition of Kyle Schwarber and the resurgence of Nick Pivetta and everything that seems to be going right at Fenway Park, right?
Tanner Houck in three games pitched a perfect game.
At the very least, I can say the Red Sox are a team that's fun to watch and easy to root for once again. And that, to me, is ultimately all I really want out of that organization. Be fun to root for. Be easy to watch. That's it.
Yeah, Pivetta. Just excited. He's another high move.
Well,
he's having his 2018 Evaldi game, except they won.
I just have a very difficult time justifying the moves that Heim made, not because they're not working out in the postseason. They seem to be. But over the course of 162, like if we're going to be playing this game every single year, okay, they're competitive, but they're not great, or they're a player or two away, and then they get into the postseason and they sometimes have success, sometimes they don't. I don't know. The reason that I said a couple of weeks ago that I wanted heads to roll was because I was concerned no matter what happened, whether they won the World Series or lost in the wild card game, the same exact thing was going to happen the following season. And now I can at least admit it works. And I'm okay with it coming back next year. But if you lose in the division series and you just try and do the same thing next year, only to then lose in the division series again and be the Tampa Bay Rays, then maybe we do have to start looking in another direction. But that's very far down the road. And it does seem as though the Red Sox are, knock on wood, going to take care of business tonight with likely Eduardo Rodriguez on the mound, maybe Tanner Houck, probably not Chris Sale.
I mean, I think
maybe
it should
Martin
be
Perez.
Forgot he was even still on the roster.
The only problem I had during the regular season, especially around the trade deadline, is you are pissing away a good season. It seemed like you knew what you needed at the trade line and you just didn't get it.
Yeah.
You didn't fix the problem. So it seemed like, you know, everything, like all the hype at the beginning of the year, because first of all, nobody thought this team was even going to make the playoffs. Nobody thought. Now you, through half of the season, you've pretty much, you know, buried that prediction. And now you're just pissing it all away. It sucks. And like, again, through that second half of the season where everybody, see, I told you they're taking care of business. Oh, good. Against the Baltimore Orioles. They should be. They're a far better team than the Orioles. You can't get hyped up about that. You can't get hyped up about Bobby Dahlbeck getting hot against the friggin' Orioles. like I can't get on that hype train. Like I need to see it happen against teams like the Yankees in the wild card, against teams like the Rays in the ALCS. Then you can pull me onto that train and I'll hop on and ride.
They seem to be putting things together at the right time. And again, they're an exciting team to watch and they're a fun team to root for.
It is fun. Holy crap. I debated on like going last night or just anything. Like,
I mean, I will say ticket prices aren't awful. They're not terrible.
I think the cheapest one last night I saw was like 155.
Oh, I saw one last night for like 90 bucks.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, different times changing. I know. Apparently they're not as expensive tonight, but you know, that's just, you know, Tuesday night or Monday night. Wow. Monday night.
Yeah. Patriots won a game. Finally, a road game against a rookie quarterback. Stop me if you've heard that one before. No, I think we can be positive about the Patriots.
To an extent.
Ugly win.
Does everybody have their... Yes, you went from a good loss to a bad win.
Right, which I would rather have more bad wins than good losses over the course of the season.
Yeah.
I think we could all probably agree with that.
Everybody have a little point they want to touch on? What stood out the most?
Was it 22-7 Houston? When they decided to
22-6
pull off that fake punt, 22-6.
Let me,
or 22-9. It was something like that. That to me was the turning point in the game because Houston had pretty much been controlling not only the pace of the game but the ball. And you were 5 minutes into the second half. You had a multiple score lead. The ball was on your like 35 or 40 yard line. You could have pinned New England deep and. I don't even know if that was a head coaching move or if the punter just took it upon himself. By the way, Bill Burr is that punter.
Now that you say that, holy crap.
Look just like him. But I don't know whose call that was and whose decision it was to be like, we want you to come up and then maybe go back 12 feet or so and then try and kick it. But
yeah,
it was an absolute disaster.
This is also the same coach who a couple weeks ago decided to take the penalty and so he could go up to on fourth down and still punt.
Yeah, I think it was, wasn't it?
Right.
And I'm kind of a David Culley guy. I was saying to my pop the other day.
That's a weird thing to be, just so we're clear.
I like the way he communicates. I think he is the type of person who understands he's in a really bad situation. And really doesn't have much to work with. And he's kind of making chicken salad out of chicken shit. So I respect him for that. Do I think he's a great football coach? I don't know. He doesn't have a great football team. But they've been competitive in games. They were competitive against the Patriots for far too long. Far too long were they competitive in that game yesterday. Masala, you said that you had an opportunity to watch it during the Sunday night game or after the Sunday night game or whatever. How do you feel about this team after a win like that?
I think the defense is starting to scare me a little bit. Like, again, this is another point in the season where the defense was supposed to be your strong point. And Devin McCourty looked really bad yesterday. that had Minneapolis miracle vibes where Devin McCourty just completely misses a tackle and then he misses another tackle. Two touchdowns get scored off of that. He didn't have Jalen Mills. And I think Jawan Williams got exposed a few times. I'm a little nervous about Kyle Duggar now. I think he's kind of just a linebacker and not really a coverage guy at all. It's not good defensively. Like you have your few shining stars. You have your Matt Judon and Christian Barmore, and that's just about it. Everybody else is kind of just skating by. And now you don't have Gilmore coming back the second half of the season. So what are you going to do? This is the defense you've decided that you're going to roll for a full year with. That doesn't look good to me.
I wouldn't say I'm too concerned about Kyle Duggar because, I mean, strong safety, so I don't expect him to be too much of a coverage guy. But I mean, there are some concerns when it comes to coverage because he should be able to do that as well. But yeah, I mean, McCourty didn't look like himself yesterday. Certainly. And JC Jackson, I mean, yesterday he proved that he can't be a number one cornerback. Number two, yeah, sure. But again, I think the big reason why he was what he was last year is because, again, he had Gilmore on the other side, who quarterback is going to throw away from. So who are you going to go throw to if you're looking on the outside? You're probably going to go after JC Jackson. So, I mean, what I'm looking at now is it time to hire a defensive coordinator or establish one? Because I'm really sick of the, is it Mayo? Is it Steve Belichick? Is Bill just overriding every... What the hell is it?
So I saw you throw that out there on Twitter yesterday, and it did get me thinking about how this team delegates responsibilities on that side of the ball, because it doesn't seem as though there's one person that's being held accountable. I think if we were going to blame...
Or is anybody being held accountable?
Right. If we were going to blame poor defensive play on somebody, it would probably be the head coach, right?
It's not even just defensive play. It's personnel issues. Two games in a row, you had personnel issues where you have 10 guys on the field or you have 12. Or you're going back and forth of who the hell's supposed to be out there.
Yeah. I don't know if a defensive coordinator necessarily controls that. I still think that comes down to position coaches. But if you've got position coaches that are doing multiple things,
then
you're not really able to focus on what you need to as a position coach.
No, but like that's, you're kind of proving that point though, is because it's two positional. Steve was the safeties coach last year, and now he's the outside linebackers coach. Mayo is what?
Inside linebackers. Coach,
inside linebackers. Okay.
So what does that mean? He's in charge of three people on this team? Like, no, really. Like, Van Noy, Hightower, Bentley. If those guys aren't on the field, then you could turn your back to the field and not even pay attention, I guess.
I just don't think the responsibility is... I don't know. I think you're going in way too many different directions where it's throwing a shit ton of people off. And it's just your defense is just not showing up because of that.
Right. And I think it's also come to the point where this defense is like... They're too specialized in the way that these guys are only going to be out here on pass downs. These guys are only going to be out here in run situations. And when that happens, that's, I think, when you get the confusion. When you're not having the same 11 guys on the defense play consecutive snaps, like, that's when you're going to have substitution issues. And if your defensive coordinator, quote unquote, isn't in a super experienced guy at that position, then these issues all make sense. I don't know if I necessarily blame defensive coordinator on Devin McCourty missing two easy plays, which led to two touchdowns, one of them on that play and one of them a couple plays later. But it's definitely been a problem, and you've seen that throughout the year.
And I think what you're really referring to in terms of getting somebody on board as a DC is just having their ducks in a row.
Yeah,
because for so long we've been so used to, and again, like, I don't want to keep saying over the last 20 years they've done this, over the last 20 years we've done that, because we have to put that to the side now. But just look around the league. Football teams that are competent, that win games, don't make mental errors like that. And if it's the coaches not holding the players accountable or the players not holding themselves accountable, either way, someone has to be able to step in and make a change and basically let them know, like, we have to come into every single game as though we're going to lose it, but we have the potential to win it. So we need to play perfect.
I mean, going through that course of yesterday's game, when it got to 22-7 or 22-6, whatever it was, towards the end of the first half, I really started to think either we peaked way too early against the Bucs.
Oh yeah, that would be way too early.
Yeah, like, no, I genuinely thought, like, holy crap, was last week our Super Bowl? Because yesterday was the Texans Super Bowl. Did we peak way too early in the season and just let it all out on the table, and now this is what we're going to be dealing with? Or did we just get a little of our head of ourselves, even after a good loss, and overhyped Europe? Not overhyped your opponent. I should say played down to the competition, which I've heard a couple different people say, like, all over the place. You played down to the competition, or you just overhyped yourself. Because again, that was the message last week was, oh, well, if we can play against Tampa, we can play against anybody. Well, you can, you know, send that theory out the window, because you guys sucked for the entire second half yesterday. Got your team, you know, given some bad head coaching coaching decisions, I should say, and some really crappy mistakes yesterday by the Texans, you did come back in the second half. You did compete. Your rookie quarterback was able to get you in a position where you were able to win. And the clock management was just perfect to your advantage, and you played well to what you had left, you know, to secure the game.
Mike, what did you think of the offensive line? I know there were a lot of injuries up front. I thought they did a pretty good job.
Yeah, definitely. I think especially for what was asked of them, I think they were able to handle themselves pretty well. I think Mac Jones only got hit 4 times, I think, in this game I read, which is very impressive considering what they had been going through the first 4 weeks. It's also not as great of a front as we're used to seeing with Houston, but they did their job. They held in there and were keeping Mac clean for the most part. Damian Harris had another 4 yard rush, 4 yards per carry rushing game. For what they were asked to do, I don't think they went out and went above and beyond or anything, but I think these guys are all NFL linemen. You kind of learned that. Like, these guys should have a spot in the league. Very interesting that Kajus still played right tackle, even though that was kind of like the question beforehand, like, is Kajust only a left tackle, and that's why he's not playing when they need Haran or Durant. But Kajust ended up filling that role this week. I am nervous that this is a team that plays up and down to their competition. Yeah. So like if everybody comes back next week, which I don't know if we'll ever see Trent Brown again, but if everybody comes back next week,
at least not for 3 weeks.
It's gonna be bad.
Just to confirm something, by the way, he went out after the first series of the first game.
Yep.
Correct.
Didn't they go 3 and out in that series? So like plays.
They picked the first run of the year was like the Harris like 15 or 20 yards. Yeah.
But he's only played like 5 snaps this season, though. Is kind of like what I'm saying. If he was out after the first series, so you're right. If he comes back, I would say it's kind of like cherry on top, but don't count on it.
I mean, I know we've met, and I got some numbers for the O-line, and I wasn't, especially with a guy like Ted Karras yesterday. I mean, you had some experience, so I wasn't as nervous about him. But what turned out to be like what should have been everybody's like biggest worry yesterday turned out not to be. That was like the surprising fact. But now I got to look at the O-line coach, because like Scarnecchia. I mean, how many times have I heard someone, at least when I'm watching a game, say, boy, do we miss Scarnecchia. Boy, do we miss Scarnecchia.
Every
it makes me wonder.
Single time.
It seriously makes me wonder what the hell has Scarnecchia done that this O-line coach can't. It makes you like wonder. Like, what goes behind Scarnecchia's coaching? That was just because that might have been one of the biggest reasons as to why he was able to reel Trent Brown in 2018 and kind of keep him in check and keep him, you know, the player that he was. Because now he's pulling off. I seriously don't think he would be pulling this crap if Scarnecchia was here. That's why he was excited to come back here. Not for Scarnecchia, but because he had so much success.
Because there's leadership and accountability.
Right.
I think
right.
That's what you got out of Scarnecchia.
And there's like 50 years of knowledge of football. So like you're getting a little bit of both. And you went into the season expecting to have 2 offensive line coaches, and one of them is not there because he opted out because he didn't want to get the vaccine.
Right.
Why do you need 2 offensive line coaches?
I'm just saying, like, you just have more.
Why do we need an outside linebackers coach? And it's actually, no, that makes a tiny bit more sense.
Does it, though? Does it?
It does make sense, but not. Well, it comes down to schemes, packages, all that kind of crap.
I suppose. But I just I don't look.
I take that back. It makes sense to have 2 positions. They are technically 2 different positions. They are. Well, I don't know. We're overthinking way too much, and we're just sounding dumb at this point.
Well,
not dumb, but like we're
not football experts trying to explain why they have some teams or some coaches, but not other coaches and responsibilities that get delegated. Like, I swear,
let's talk about the quarterback. Huh?
You could be a freaking janitor at Gillette Stadium, and they're going to ask you to do something for the football team.
Hey, I don't know about that. Should we move on to the quarterback, though? Can we move on to the quarterback?
Before we move on to the quarterback, let's talk about the running game. Not the running game, but the fumbles. What are we doing here? How do you teach an entire team to stop fumbling? How do you do it?
How do you teach Damian Harris not to fumble at the freaking goal line?
Damian Harris, Ramondre Stevenson, J.J. Taylor.
I think Stevenson had a little bit of a bounce back day yesterday.
What did he get, like 3 carries, 4 carries? I mean,
11
I think
carries.
He held onto the freaking ball. He Solid. Held onto the ball.
You'll
so
love
it's
this.
A step in the right
direction. Who's been the best running back on the Patriots so far this season?
It's been Brandon Bolden.
Yeah, honestly,
I haven't seen him drop anything. I haven't seen him fumble anything. I mean, he's so average that that's a good thing for the Patriots.
I mean, I think
had
a
like
lot
a nice
of people
20-yard run yesterday.
Yeah, I think I don't honestly. I take the New Orleans game out of it because you know a guy who opted out, and we've seen before in many a times, and as a running back, whether it's out of the backfield or to you know run the ball, I'll take a slow Brandon Bolden who will maybe gain a yard or at least get back to this line of scrimmage and hold on to the freaking ball rather than a Damian. I'm not taking him over. And oh man, just rather than a freaking fumble, what are we doing? Like some guy said it on Twitter yesterday, like, oh, just keep feeding him the ball. Like he's consistent. I wouldn't call 2 red zone fumbles consistent.
Right.
I wouldn't call it that.
Right.
That's pretty freaking worrisome.
Yeah. I would say it's consistently inconsistent.
Because again, you're digging yourself into a hole. And again, that's where they were like, crap, we fumbled the ball. It turned into a score. Now we're down. I don't know.
But where do we go? Where do we go? When is the trade deadline?
October. No.
Is it week 7?
Week 8, I think.
Week 8?
It's still the same.
So probably around the end of October.
Hold on.
Because we had talked.
I believe week 7.
We had talked a couple episodes ago about how we were going to fix the team, what you could add at the deadline to try and make it better. And I think we're on a consensus about offensive line, that the offensive line was the biggest area of need for this team because we needed to improve the running game and protect the quarterback.
I don't know. I think you saw something at November 2nd, week 8, by the way.
Okay.
At 4 p.m. So it's a Tuesday.
Okay.
Honestly, what you saw from Karras yesterday wasn't terrible. So again, do you go back to sticking him in and then, it depends on when Wynn comes back because, you know, now we know Ueno is vaccinated, was asymptomatic, and was hopeful to at least.
So then how come he couldn't come back after 2 days?
I think it was something on the timing. I don't know off the top of my head, but at least he was closer than Wynn to coming back.
Yeah.
So
I still think that adding to the offensive line is a smart decision to make. Yes. It's not something that would be a dumb move, but they need help in other areas. If we're going to be relying on Jalen Mills to be healthy for every single game, and that's going to determine whether or not JC Jackson can actually perform at a competent level on the football field, another guy that I don't necessarily want to put all my faith into is Jalen Mills. So we're finding that this is a team that is lacking depth. And the question that I have to you guys, something that I thought about yesterday, not including Tom Brady, take any Patriot from the history of the franchise in their prime and put them on this team. How much better is the team? And who is the Patriot? Like, what is the one position or the one player where you could say if they had that guy, they go from being a 500 team to being like an 11-6 or 12-5 type team?
Well, I mean,
are they a player away?
I don't think they're a player away from making it a huge difference. Like every player that I'm thinking of would be like a 1 or 2 game difference right now. Like I immediately, my first thought was offensive line's been terrible. I'd go John Hanna. But like, What does that save you?
I was thinking even in terms of more of the like intangibles, it's like a Rodney Harrison, you know, somebody who's going to be able to play in the secondary and play big minutes in the secondary, but also have an impact on the entire team.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think if Kyle, I'm not saying he could be Rodney Harrison, but if, you know, Duggar's got to improve his coverage, which hasn't been terrible for the most part of the season. But you know, He's got what's the word I'm looking for?
I don't know.
Me neither. no, but Duggar's got to improve his coverage a little bit. I think you're definitely a cornerback away and you're a receiver away. There's no guy that can open it. Mac doesn't have that guy that can open it up. And when he does, you know, it's either we drop it or we can't come back. Like that intercept, I mean, I was going to save this for quarterback talk, but Nelson Agholor cannot come back to the freaking ball. Yesterday, that interception, could the throw have been better? Yes. But yeah, I mean, Agholor got freaking manhandled in coverage. My God, he couldn't come back to the ball. He slipped up on himself and was getting manhandled by the corner. And we saw the same thing. Not so much the physicality, but we saw the same thing last week on he ran a comeback route on the left side of the field. He's waiting for the ball. A split second later, it would have been picked off.
Mm-hmm.
Come back. That's what separates you from being a crap receiver and a good receiver. Sometimes you got to make your quarterback look pretty good.
Yeah.
It's happened with Brady before. It has.
I think Brady put it perfectly when they asked him about breaking the all-time passing record. And he's like, that's kind of a record that I can share with a lot of different people because the quarterback can only throw the ball. He can't catch the ball. You know, you need somebody to catch
it. You're, you know, Giselle Bundchen.
No, literally, she said my husband can't do both. Yeah. But I think that New England, them not being one player away, one real impact, high-level player away, does give me a little bit of cause for concern about the future. Now, obviously, you're not going to have rookie Mac Jones for his entire career. The idea is that this guy's going to get better, that he's going to improve.
No,
he's going to learn, he's going to learn some things. He's going to learn what not to do in certain situations. And you would also like to hope that your drafts are going to improve, that some of the guys that you've taken over the last couple of years are starting to turn into more quality level players than what you had in 2017, which I think was 4 picks. And the first one wasn't until the 3rd round or something like that.
Which, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but these last 2 drafts are trending in the right direction.
Yeah.
Last year, Duggar, Uche, I mean, this year, obviously, Mac is,
I think,
no wrong pick there.
Jones, but Barmore. You could say Stevenson, although he really hasn't been given much of an opportunity yet this year. But
he's out of the doghouse, at least. He's, you know. But this is, again,
nowhere else to sleep.
Now, Harris, you know, he left with the chest injury, came back. Now he left with the rib injury. Is he going to be good to go? Is he not going to be good to go? How many weeks is he going to be out? It's your time, Stevenson, because now it's him, Taylor, and Bolden.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Feeling good about that Sony trade?
No.
How many fumbles does he have down the red zone?
I don't think he has any so far this year.
No, like in at all with the Patriots.
In the red zone? I don't think he did. Yeah, you're right. I mean, he was never really the type of guy that you would worry about fumbling the ball. He was just the type of guy who you never thought was going to break a game open. And right now, I don't think that's what New England needs. They just need someone who can hold on to it.
It's again, that's why you traded him away. And you got a decent return on him. I'm not saying that
3rd and a 4th for him.
I believe so. I don't have it in front of me. But again, it's not like the return was bad. It was bad. It wasn't a good it wasn't a bad trade. But
doesn't help you now.
You put all your confidence in Stevenson and now that didn't really work out. But this is Stevenson's, you know, time. Now he has an opportunity to be the workhorse next week.
Tough test coming into Gillette Stadium this week at the Dallas Cowboys. I think easily a top 4 team in the NFC, probably a top 5 team in the NFL. Possess a lot of problems for the defense, I think. Mobile quarterback, good running game, playmakers on the outside of the numbers, outside of the hash marks, lots of speed on that side of the ball. I don't anticipate this being a good game for New England, but I would be surprised if
you're lucky it's at home.
That's the reason why. Every single game, and they're 0-3 at home and 2-0 on the road, but every single game that they've played at home so far has been the type of game where if it was on the road, there's no chance you win. Zero.
Yeah, I think what I would do is I would take that game plan that you used for the Bucs a couple weeks ago and run that back. Just do the same thing. You might have a little bit of a more mobile quarterback in Dak than Brady is, and your tight ends are probably a little bit better than what OJ Howard is right now. But I think that should be the game plan. If you just want to let Zeke run again, the No Sean Moreno game plan, let him run 100 times And you can keep the game close. That should be their game plan and going into that game, because they're not going, it's another game. They're not going to be able to start to stop those wide receivers unless you start messing with the quarterback's head.
Defensively, I guess they got a corner that likes to intercept passes.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Stephon Diggs' cousin, brother, something like that.
I think it's his brother.
Trayvon Diggs?
Yeah.
He's got 6 interceptions through 5 games.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good.
6 interceptions through 5 games for this guy. Mac, don't throw it over there. Even if he's not really that good and he's just kind of lucky, like if he's getting deflected interceptions and things like that, don't test him. Keep it to the other side. Just play smart. I think it's one of those games where it's like, you know what's not going to work, don't try it. You know what might work, you know, give it a little extra effort to that side of the ball.
Yeah, I think if I were their defensive coordinator right now, I'd be looking at this game like, who am I going to waste Trayvon Diggs on? Because there's no wide receiver that like deserves his coverage. I mean, I feel like it's got to be Jacoby Myers because he's the only one who's like, I feel like he's moving the sticks every time.
But yeah, I would chalk Bourne up there.
I think Bourne is making impacts with his receptions, but he doesn't.
The only one that seems to run with the friggin' ball after the catch.
How many targets is he getting per game, Bourne? He's still probably around like a half dozen targets a game. But he is the type of guy that they've basically said, all right, ball in your hands, go make a play. With Aguilar, it's he catches it, he's down. With Myers, forget it. He catches it, he's down. This poor guy, too. Like, he just cannot get into the end zone. No. And the drop that he had yesterday.
Heard footsteps.
That was pitiful.
Yep. But that's the thing, too, is like, Mac could have those deep throws and some more yards after the catch.
Oh, yeah. No, I see it.
His targets just keep, like, letting. They're not doing him any favors, really. They aren't.
I see it. Like, if he was throwing to wide open guys 30, 40 yards down the field like he was at Alabama, yeah, his numbers would be incredible.
I mean, you know, there's no question that the arm is there. The accuracy is there. He's 7th in completion percentages, which you want to argue, you know, what's the throws and all this stuff. He's accurate with the ball, more accurate than the last guy we had. I mean, I can't imagine what a lot of people are saying, you know, oh, there were a lot of throws that could have been intercepted yesterday. I'm fine with that. There's only one way you're going to be able to learn as a rookie, and it's a rookie quarterback. At least we could say that they could have been intercepted.
Right.
Because if you had Cam, oh, now you're relying on the run game. Well, the run game hasn't really been what it is either. So that's okay. A little quarterback spewing, you know, well, diverting. Sorry.
So reel it back in. New England 2-3 heading into week 6, home game against the Dallas Cowboys. I don't anticipate them winning it. Let's say they're 2-4. The Jets come in the following week. If you can take care of business in that one, now you're 3-4, roughly halfway through the season. You're actually in better shape than you were last year. Now, I think the second half schedule for you is probably more difficult than the first half schedule, but
you don't have your bye until week 14.
But ideally, in the second half of the season, you're not only improving, you're getting better and you're peaking. So if you're playing against better teams in the second half of the season, the idea is you're also better. So maybe those games are not as scary looking as they are right now.
I mean, honestly, this is genuinely how I'm feeling. Would they be lucky to go even 10-7? They'd be lucky to get to 10 wins.
I agree.
It sucks.
They're a 500 team.
It sucks to say, but it's.
They will.
I don't know.
Lose all the games they're supposed to lose. Win all the games they're supposed to win. And by win all the games they're supposed to win, I mean the Jets. They'll win both Jets games. And they will find a way to win some games that they should lose, and they'll find a way to lose some games that they should win, which when you just break it all down means you'll be 500.
I think they got to look at this past week and say to themselves, all right, that was way too close for comfort. And I think we did overhype ourselves a little bit after a really good game against the Bucs. So they definitely have the capability to play up to the competition. So I'm not too down on the team, and I'm confident against them against the Cowboys. Again, it's just, it comes down to just, you know, fumbling at the goal line, you know, putting a gun to our foot and just, it's really what it is. You're digging yourself into holes that are just,
that's what bad teams do.
And again, it's good that they're taking advantage of stupid mistakes against the Texans. Like, you know, that punt that got rifled into, you know, the back of the guy's head. It's, you know, Mac Jones put it perfectly, you know, they asked him about, you know, the the play of the game and how they think he played. And I had it in front of me earlier, but he said, I don't know if we outplayed them, but we certainly outcompeted them, which is true. I mean, that's a good way to describe that game yesterday. Perfect.
Masal, any closing thoughts on either the Texans or looking forward to the Cowboys?
Yeah, like I said, I think that this is a very tough matchup for them. It's another game where I think a lot of people will. The line is only 3.5 in that game, or now it's 4. I just looked. A lot of people are going to hammer the Cowboys on that side. Maybe some of them are, again, in this room. But I just think that, like, this is a game that could be winnable if you put in that same effort, if you put in that same game plan that you use. This is, again, this is a team that seems to want to get up for the big challenges and let themselves down for the games that they don't think they need to try for. Well, guess what? This is your next challenge. Because again, like you said, you're playing the Jets next week, and it's another letdown spot where I'm sure they'll score like 17 points. I'm 17-5. This is you need to take care of business. So you have to go in there and at least look like you try. Because I don't know how many times I'll say it this season. I'll probably say it every week. Wins and losses to me this season don't mean anything. Show that you're building something. Show that you're going the right direction. They'll have another shot to do that next week, and it's going to be a tough one.
I'd say that the schemes that you had in coverage against Tampa, you definitely need. Can you force, because Zeke's a little banged up. You got a little bit. I mean, there were injuries left and right in that, Cowboys and Giants game yesterday.
He hurt himself falling on a pylon. That was the craziest injury I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah. Yeah. Riddle me that one, right? That's, I don't know.
All right. So I didn't watch any of the Cowboys Giants game. What happened?
Zeke fell into the end zone and he landed on the pylon and he hurt himself. He went back in. He was fine, but he hurt himself on the pylon.
Like the foam pylon?
It was one of the pylon cams. So
they're not exactly foam. They're like a hard
rubber.
Rubber. Yeah.
Like a traffic cone.
Right.
Yes. Just dense, more dense and like thick. And then, yeah, you get the freaking camera in there. But, can you force them to go to the run? Because yesterday, I mean, Jamie Collins, I think he played like 3 snaps yesterday, but
one of them. Yeah. I saw him on the field. I noticed him.
So the pass rush needs to be there. I think Judon is proving a little bit more that he can track guys down out of the pocket and out of the backfield. You got to force them to, put the ball on the ground, really.
Mm-hmm.
Or force Dak to make some pretty, crap-ass throws.
Judon is on pace to break the Patriots record for sacks in the season.
Destroy really? It, probably. Wow. What is he at, 6.5 through 5 games?
6.5, I think it puts him on pace for 22.5. And
which would be the record.
Right.
Or 23, I think is
23 the record. 23 is the NFL record.
Yeah.
But he, right now, I think Tippett has a record, I think, at 18. So he would, blow past it if he keeps.
Yeah, he's getting a sack a game right now.
It's pretty good.
It's a matter of when, not if.
Easily right. The best free agent signing.
The sleeves.
We'll say that time and again.
The sleeves, the red sleeves. I'm telling you, if I had a kid and he was going trick-or-treating this year, I'm buying him a Judon jersey and I'm throwing red sleeves underneath it and I'm telling him, go knock on people's doors. And
says you need permission to wear those. You need permission for the red sleeves.
For the red sleeves?
Yeah. From him, though, from him. It's his look.
That's all right. I don't mind that.
Yeah.
He owns it.
Tweeting him.
Yeah.
I didn't like it at first. I didn't. And that was more towards the uniforms, really. I was just, it's too high schoolish, but I'm okay with it now.
I think that's probably going to do it for today's episode then. But
we need bets. What are you talking about?
Before we finish up, it is parlay time. We're having some real shit luck this year.
I got to go back and make sure or check everybody's record.
We
do need to do that though.
And we've somewhat kept track of it. Good enough at least. But last week for us to lose based on half a point. That sucks.
It's a heartbreaker.
That sucks. Week 6 NFL National Football League games. We're finally getting into the bye portion of the schedule, right? So not every team is going to be playing a game. It's the glorious part of the season. I closed out my sports book and I don't know why, because I was looking at it and then I All right, here we go. Masala, do you got a, you have any good feelings about this week? Strong feelings about this week?
I mean, there are a couple picks I like. I think I'm going to start with a dog for us. We might be riding dogs this week. The Chargers at the Ravens. The Chargers are +3.5 right now.
Ooh.
I feel like the Chargers are one of the better teams in the league right now. I put up a huge game. Came out on top against Cleveland this past week. I'm riding. I'm dying with Justin Herbert. +3.5.
Some people are saying that if they were going to start a franchise, they would use Justin Herbert as their quarterback and not Patrick Mahomes.
Some people are also 80-year-old coaches, but then looked pretty good last night when Patrick Mahomes did not look so good.
And I would also like to say some quarterbacks have played Patrick Mahomes 3 times in their less than 2-year career and have beat him twice.
Mm.
So
it's pretty good. It comes down to the mobility.
I think Justin Herbert is also mobile.
Yeah, but I honestly can't say I've watched Herbert enough.
I think that's fair.
But I mean, who's the more mobile quarterback? It's Mahomes.
I don't know.
Who runs out of the pocket more?
Mahomes definitely runs out of the pocket more, but I think that might be by design.
That is what so that's what I'm looking at. I mean, that's, is he mobile? Yes. Like look at Josh Allen. He's mobile. But again, if he's getting hit,
he moves though. Like he runs.
Yeah.
Fuck, I just closed it out again. Can we? All right.
I'm looking about how much he gets. He runs out of the pocket.
Give me your
how
pick many time, so that I don't lose my spot again. what are you looking at? What do you like this week?
Well, I'm riding the undefeated team. I'm riding with the underdog this
damn
week.
Damn. Yeah, you're right.
Arizona. Where the hell is it? +2.5 against the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah. So controversy. Perhaps last week our Arizona +5 wasn't actually a +5. I still think it was. Because if we go back and listen to the podcast, I think we all say +5. And I also think that I wrote it down as I'm writing down right now at +5. Let me not get distracted though. Arizona +2.5. Against Cleveland, though. Cleveland's got a good team, and Cleveland's at home, man.
Yeah, I don't know. No, but I'm going with the Cardinals this week.
All right.
I like the underdog.
I think that's fair. A couple of underdogs then for you guys this week. Oh, how the turntables. I'm not going to go underdog. I'm going to go favorite. I am going to go Cincinnati -3.5 against the Lions.
See, this could be the turning point. Is Nick, we're picking the underdogs and Nick is picking the favorite. This could be it. But it could be it.
It could be the turning point, but it could also finally be the time that Dan Campbell breaks through instead of breaking down.
Did anybody feel bad for him crying yesterday? I really didn't.
No, because it was more tears of joy. He was sad.
I wouldn't go. I don't know if those were joyous tears.
He's emotionally invested in his group of players, and maybe they'll respond well to that. Maybe they won't. But I do like them 3.5 point underdogs at home against the Bengals. So I take Cincinnati -3.5. Do we have a consensus pick?
I'll throw out the other two that I was...
Just be mindful of that Joe Burrow throat contusion.
That's okay.
Okay. He might not be playing, though.
That's okay.
Okay.
What were your other...
The other two that I was just looking at, just throwing out there. Bucks -7 at Philadelphia. And Cowboys -4 at Patriots.
Philadelphia coming off a big win against the Panthers.
Yeah. Letdown game. Mm-hmm.
I was also looking at a Panthers game, though.
What was it, -7?
-7, yep. Also a Thursday night.
The Panthers, the Bucks game. It is a Bucks game.
Is the ultimate curveball.
Mm.
Where is it? Is it in Philly? I closed out the page.
In Philly.
It is in Philly, yep.
Ooh, I don't know.
I saw Minnesota +1 against Carolina or Carolina -1. So that's kind of like a pick-em.
I like Carolina -1.
I was thinking Carolina -1.
How much longer is Dalvin Cook out?
What about the Jaguars? Are they on a bye week this week?
No, they're playing Miami.
They play Miami.
It's in London. No, it's a 9:30
game. I mean, they're a disaster.
The Jacksonville Grinders.
here's the thing. Both of those teams are very bad.
Well, at least one of those teams has a head coach that people are afraid to make mistakes because they might not get to play. Whereas Urban Meyer is probably afraid to say the wrong thing to his players. Although Miles Jack slapping him on the ass, I thought that was good for morale. It's kind of ironic.
Like, I want to see a side-by-side of those two pictures. They also broke down their huddle with a 1-2-3 grind. I think that that's a little outrageous. Like, your coach has, nobody has any respect for this guy.
No respect, no control. The guy, all he's going to do from now on is collect the paycheck till the end of the season and then get fired.
Mm-hmm. Can I share just a tidbit just to go off topic for a second?
Yeah, why not?
Mac Jones ties NFL record for most completions by a rookie in his first five starts. He is tied with Joe Burrow, Kyler Murray, and Justin Herbert.
Surprised that Kyler Murray is on that list. Surprised that all three of those guys have the same number of completions through five starts.
That's pretty wild.
That is pretty wild. But yeah, surprised that Kyler Murray is on that list. Consensus, anyone?
I mean, I'm cool with Carolina.
I like Carolina.
Carolina minus one. Lock it.
Homemade
things today. We got our own personal gym.
Oh, fantastic. All right. Now I think we've reached the end of another episode, episode 60. But before we finish, anybody get a final blow?
Go Sox. Thank you, Haim.
Final blow. Oof. I don't know. I got way too many things going through my mind right now between the Sox and the Patriots.
I would say probably not then. Your final blow is incomplete. My final blow, guess what's happening on Saturday?
It's inconclusive.
Anybody? Anybody? Quest for the Cup starts. Bruins. Stars. Puck drops. 7 o'clock Saturday. Be there. Be square. Be the bear. Go Bruins.
Bruins.
Whoa.
Whoa. Whoa. Whoa.
You almost had it. You're getting up there.
Whoa. We're ruins.
But no, episode 60 of Moving the Goalposts,
David Andrews 60.
Yeah, I didn't want to say that one.
No, I'll do it for you.
A Garen Veris. 60.
A who?
A who?
Garen Ferris?
Ferris. Defensive end.
From
played between 1985 and 1991. Tail 21 combined sacks in his first two seasons.
Was it a Daniel Bard 60 to start his career?
Might have been. I know it was a Henry Owens 60.
Ooh. I'm gonna go outside of Boston. A Jose Theodore 60.
Wow.
Other than Carey Price, he was the last goaltender to win the Vezina and the Hart in the same season. Josie Theodore, 60.
Wow.
60.
That deserves an Owen Wilson. Wow.
60.
It's just not a basketball number.
60 is definitely not a basketball number.
A Rich Ornberger, 60.
Rich Ornberger. Was he the gay guy? Or that was Ryan Callahan?
Yeah, that's Ryan Callahan.
Okay. I always get them mixed up.
Mm-hmm. I also get them mixed up with Andy Katzenmoyer.
I don't even know who that is, so I don't get them mixed up at all. But episode 60, we want to make sure that you guys are following along throughout the week. You can check out the Twitter and Instagram, I guess, for this Moving the Goalpost podcast at Moving the Post. I'm available on Twitter at NickMara94. Masala is available at Mike_Masala. Producer extraordinaire Andrew Meehan, he can be caught at Meehan_83. Mike, till next time.
Later, brother.
Peace.
I'm going to tell you a story.